And while you were writing Hitchhikers, you were writing Doctor Who as well.
Right.
I mean, technology overtook Doctor Who, didn't it?
Well, there's a very interesting thing. Now, I started watching Doctor Who, you know, when I was 11, but I'd never ever seen the first episode, which went out on the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And then whilst I was working on Doctor Who as script editor, I got to see the first episode for the first time. Now, when I knew I was going to watch it, I thought, well, you know, of course we've moved on a lot since then, haven't we? You know, and I was feeling a little bit grand and thinking, well, you know, one will watch it with a certain amount of indulgence. And I sat and watched it, and it was much better. It was very, very good, the first couple of episodes. Yeah. It really was excellent. And I think part of what went wrong with it was colour, because, you know the sort of lighting you get in BBC studios, which make everything look very, very brightly coloured. Now, watching the first episode, when they sort of go back to the cavemen and everything, and you actually believe these were cavemen sort of huddling in the dark shadows, and that was very, very dramatic, yeah. And I think we lost some of that later on.
W brings us not to Wogan, but to the subject of that extract, Doctor Who. It was very soon after the initial success of Hitchhikers that Douglas was commissioned to write his first Doctor Who adventure. This was a four-part story entitled The Pirate Planet, which involved a planet that had been adapted by the evil captain to jump through space in order to completely surround smaller planets and mine them to extinction. In this dramatic clip, the captain takes the Doctor to his trophy room to see the compacted remains of several planets. And there, to the Doctor's horror, he boasts of his conquests.
My trophies, Doctor. Feast your eyes on them, for they represent an achievement unparalleled in the universe.
What are they? Tombstones, eh? Memorials to all the worlds you've destroyed.
Not memorials. These are the entire remains of the worlds themselves.
You come here to gloat on the wanton destruction you've wreaked on the universe.
Come in here to dream of freedom.
Did you just say the entire remains of the worlds themselves?
Yes, Doctor. Each of these small spheres is the crushed remains of a planet. Millions upon millions of tons of compressed rock held suspended here by forces beyond the limits of the imagination. Forces that I have generated and harnessed.
That's impossible! That amount of matter in so small a space would undergo instant gravitational collapse and form a black hole.
Precisely.
But Xanak could be dragged into a gravitational whirlpool.
Why doesn't it? Because the whole system is so perfectly aligned by the most exquisite exercise in gravitational geometry that every system is balanced out within itself, which is why we can stand next to billions of tons of supercompressed matter and not even be aware of it. With each new planet I acquire, the forces are realigned, but the system remains stable.
Then it's the most brilliant piece of astrogravitational engineering I've ever seen. The concept is simply staggering. Pointless, but staggering.
I'm gratified that you appreciate it.
Appreciate it? Appreciate it? But you commit mass destruction and murder on a scale that's almost inconceivable, and you ask me to appreciate it? Just because you happen to have made a brilliantly conceived toy out of the mummified remains of planets?
Terrible storms, Doctor! It is not a toy!
What's it for? What are you doing? What could possibly be worth all this?
By the raging fury of the Sky Demon, you ask too many questions. You have seen, you have admired. Be satisfied and ask no more.
Captain, sir, come quickly, please. The Mendiants, they're on their way.
Excellent, Mr. Fibbily, excellent.
Douglas was very good at the old cliffhanger endings, but sometimes with his tongue planted very firmly in his cheek. At the end of episode 3, for example, in the tradition of all good pirate vessels, the captain orders the Doctor at gunpoint to, yes, walk the plank.
A plank? The theory is very simple. You walk along it. At the end, you fall off. Drop 1,000 feet. Dead.
You can't be serious. You see? Captain, you don't realize what you're doing. If you just listen to me...
I shall listen to you when I hear you scream!
But, please...
But...
Has the Doctor really fallen 1,000 feet to his death? Is this the end of Doctor Who? Of course not. It's amazing what you can do with a pocket-sized holographic projector. Cue episode 4.
Hello, everybody.
Doctor.
Sorry I couldn't make the jump myself. I've got a terrible head for heights.
Then who?
I've discovered your little secret. We're not all quite as we seem. Neat little machine, isn't it? Any image it projects might almost be real. Hello, Doctor.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, terribly well. Can't complain. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And just as I can switch off that image of myself, I can also switch off the image of another apparently real person.
Douglas was criticized by some fans for injecting too much humor into the story, something which Douglas strongly defended. He admitted later that the Pirate Planet did indeed tread a narrow dividing line between being outright funny and being dramatic. But he thought this was the most interesting area in which to operate, adding cautiously, "Humour is obviously an important part of Doctor Who, but it must never undercut the drama. It must always reinforce it." Well, here's a prime example. In this sequence, which without the visuals I need to set up for you, the Doctor leaves a group of psychics behind, instructing one of them to maintain a telepathic link with his own mind while he and his assistant Romana rush off to perform a rescue mission. The Doctor and Romana then leap aboard an inertia neutralizer, a kind of horizontal high-speed escalator, pursued by two guards, and once he's safely off it, the Doctor interferes with the mechanism so that the guard's own inertia is not neutralized, leaving them to crash at high speed into a wall. Whilst an apoplectic captain and his henchmen observe this from the safety of the control room, the Doctor and Romana then jump into a stolen flying pod and set off for the TARDIS, with the Doctor discussing the laws of Newtonian physics in his own inimitable style. To sum up, what Douglas has actually written here encompasses a sly dig at psychic Uri Geller, a classic example of pure slapstick, a sublime Laurel and Hardy moment between the captain and his henchmen, and an exchange between the Doctor and Romana which could have come straight out of a Python sketch, and all within the space of 2 minutes. Now, to do all that, whilst the plot moves forward at breakneck speed, surely takes a special talent. Judge for yourself.
Quick, back to the TARDIS. K9, keep generating power. Felix?
Yes?
Read my mind. What can you see?
A strip of metal.
Right.
Subdivided at one end with an acute angle halfway along.
Right. Now, whatever happens, you keep concentrating on my mind. Come on, Romana. We've got a planet to save.
What were you thinking of, Doctor?
Bend fork.
Why should anybody want to bend a fork?
I haven't the vaguest idea.